Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Social Work Bubble podcast. I'm your host, Laura. Today, I am excited. We are joined by Jordan Arrighetti with Support Now. Thank you so much, Jordan, for coming on today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, today we're going to dive into really Support Now, kind of supporting people in crisis and times of like tremendous need, what that can tangibly look like. Do you want to just start off by sharing like what Support Now is and kind of your journey to even creating it?
Sure. So very quickly, Support Now is a free online website that allows supporters to provide relief to families in tough times through money, meals, volunteering, and updates. Think of it as the easiest way to describe it is a modern version of GoFundMe meets MailTrain meets Caring Bridge, plus this concept of what we call Lend a Hand, which some people use like Sign Up Genius for, but completely all in one, and also completely customizable. The genesis of building this company. So I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders. My other co-founder is my husband. And we've been very lucky in our life, actually, to not have had too many traumatic, life-changing moments. Knock on wood, we've been spared for now. That said, we have been supporters many, many times. There was a series of events through 2020 where we felt like we were consistently and constantly on the receiving end of a text message, a phone call, an email, a Facebook note that something had happened. Something in our community, something with friends or family, whether that be a kid suddenly in the hospital, car crash, house fires, sudden decline, loss. And what we observed was that every time those things happened, the same behaviors took place for supporters. And I think it's something that everyone can relate to, where immediately you're on a text chain with close family members and friends, and everyone's asking the same questions. What do we do to help?
Yeah.
What do we do? Where do we do? How should we do it? Has anyone talked to the family? No, I'm a little bit nervous to reach out. Are you more comfortable? No, I'm not so comfortable, but I want to do something. I'm not really sure. Maybe we should wait. Maybe we should. And it's what I call the fog of confusion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so in that fog of confusion, we notice that a lot of times what happens, sadly, is that people don't take action because they're so afraid of doing and saying the wrong thing. They don't feel like they have either the proper language. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. And so therefore they do nothing, which is really sad. So we approach Support Now from the perspective of supporters of, well, wouldn't it be great if there was a place that you could go for free to help organize and cultivate and really rally all the people around a family going through a tough time through the prisms of not just money and meals, but also through this idea of lend a hand. And that is what Support Now has become.
That's so exciting. Because I mean, like, you know, like I'm a social worker. I mean, I'm working as a therapist right now, but that's such a big part of what we do is how can we help people where they're at in a way that makes sense. And even when I work with clients that are dealing with grief and loss, they still come to that same spot where they're like, well, what do I do? Like, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. I don't want to like make anyone uncomfortable. It's just a really tough spot to be in.
It is a tough spot. And we, you know, having not, I mean, I'm very, very transparent about this. I don't have a degree in this and I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a social worker. So we spent years just doing deep research and discovering on this because we didn't have the credibility of what it was like to go through it. And we didn't have the degrees to back it up. So instead, what we did is we just went on this long, long listening tour to people that have gone through all sorts of tough times. And then we talked to supporters who have gone through all types of tough times. And then spiritual leaders and psychiatrists and psychologists, doctors, trying to understand why is status quo the way it is. And there's really kind of two prisms to look at it. One is the family. So what we know is that, and you can speak to this better than I can, is that psychologically, when a tough time happens, one of the first things that happens, particularly at the early stages of, call it grief, even if it's anticipatory grief, is decision fatigue. A family has just kind of, something has happened. Again, and grief, as we know, it is not just loss, right? It could just be something that you know is going to be a massive change in your life. And now you're forced to make decisions at such a speed and such a rate that anything beyond the essential becomes overwhelming. So that part we're aware of, decision fatigue. We're also aware of that for families, asking and receiving help is really hard.
Really hard.
Really hard. And what we've learned along the journey is that it's actually rooted deep, deep, deep down in the emotion of shame, which is really hard to overcome. So that's one prism, and I'll kind of bridge these together. The second prism is the prism of supporters. Who absolutely want to do something. And their psychology is, if I don't know what to do, then I just won't do it because it's the fear of doing it wrong. And it's also the fear of bothering. You know, I don't want to interrupt them if they're at the hospital or if they're at a hospice center or if they're just getting this news. I'm afraid that if I say something, frankly, it might make things worse. And so when we were creating support now, we had to be incredibly intentional about, frankly, not just the features, but how we present the feature set so that we could create space for both things to be true. Meaning, it can be very hard for families to make decisions and families to ask and receive help. And there should also be a space for supporters to be able to proactively offer their expressions of support without the awkwardness and fear of not getting a response or saying the wrong thing. So that's part of the conversation that we're facilitating on support now that's so beautiful, because what we've learned is, if the question for families that's so difficult to answer is, what can I do to help? Or let me know what I can do to help, which is what we've heard is nails on a chalkboard. Then what we have to do is we have to create a way and an atmosphere for supporters to show up in a way that makes it much more easy, much easier for families to digest. And what I mean by that is, what can I do to help is hard, but seeing that 10 people have offered to walk your dog, well, that's much easier to say yes to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's also a lot more specific and they still have control over what that help looks like without it being overwhelming, which I think is that piece that gets so hard, where there's just that almost like freeze where nothing happens. Because I've heard for some people, okay, well, they don't know what to do, so they don't do it. And then there are some people that are really outgoing, so they'll just show up and they'll do the most, and that might not land with someone really well. So this is a really good middle ground where everyone feels good and they're doing something to be helpful.
And let me ask you this, you know, I'd imagine within your clients along the years, part of the challenge is getting support at the right times. Like how many clients do you have that say, gosh, everyone was there at the beginning, but when I needed it most, everyone was gone. I mean, would you say that that's like
all the time, all the time?
All the time. It's funny, right.
I was working with someone just the other day. Their mom passed away years ago now, like almost 10 years ago. And I mean, their mom had kind of handled everything anyways, but immediately after, like for a few weeks, maybe a couple months, there was huge support, huge outreach. But now, even years and years later, this person is still kind of grappling with like, I'm all alone. I have no one to help me. I have to do all of this on my own without my mom. And it's so hard because it's just this concentrated, overwhelming support that also isn't really helpful. Because at that point for her, it was just people saying, let me know if you need anything. I'm here for you, without actual tangible support.
And what we've learned, again, just through talking and learning here, is that, you know, they're culturally, it's very interesting. We being supporters, we rush at the beginnings. We rush at the beginning of a diagnosis. We rush at the beginning when you hear the news of a loss. And it's I use that word rush intentionally because it's an adrenaline.
Oh, yeah.
It's an event. It's something major. It's what it's in a very kind of trite way. It's gossip. It's something that's going on in your community that becomes very social very quickly. And so what's really, really sad about culturally how we, what we do, again, we rush to help. And yet these families, especially those that are truly about to enter or entering grief, they have no capacity to accept any of that because they are simply in a state of shock or anger. And so one of the things we're trying to facilitate is the idea that support should and can last longer certainly from the point of diagnosis, but also it should last longer than 3 weeks after someone dies, potentially. You know, 3 weeks after, a month later is really where what's odd. It's like they're kind of like an inverse correlation, mm-hmm. where the family is finally coming up for air. They're beginning to process a new normal, a new reality, mm-hmm. a new circumstance. Meanwhile, everyone else is slowly moving on. And so I genuinely believe that technology can be used for good to teach people what the behaviors you should be practicing should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does over time is less and less you need technology to do it, and more you're just doing it the right way.
Yeah.
I say this all the time, but I think it's really sad to me how so many times, I'm sure you've experienced this in your personal life mm-hmm. as well, people say to you, gosh, I just never knew what you went through until I went through this, until I lost
yeah.
grandfather or my parent or my, God forbid, a child. Or something like, I didn't know what you were going through when you got this diagnosis, or you mm-hmm. went through your house burned down or got flooded by a hurricane. I think the most beautiful thing about humans is our ability to show compassion during life's happy times
yeah.
and life's tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't have to wait to experience something to know how to act.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, today, that's what we do primarily. Mm-hmm. We wait until we've gone through it to empathize.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're not going to solve the world's problem. I don't want to overemphasize what we're doing.
But it's so important.
But these are big things. Mm-hmm. These are big things. And I think as social workers, you know this. You know, you're also at the kind of the crossroads of what someone's reality is, what people's resources are, what people's mm-hmm. communities are, and kind of how do you blend all of those things together to create the most mm-hmm. optimal outcome or scenario for a family.
Mm-hmm.
It's in some ways like this is, I mean, we do this, like we talk to social workers because yeah. we feel that this is a resource for their families or the people they're supporting. And social workers understand the complexities mm-hmm. of someone's environment. Because it's not just your physical environment. It's all the things around you that allows you to get the support that you need.
Yeah. It's complex. You know, there's a whole kind of theory and foundation in social work that we call like person and environment. And I think that sounds very simple. But when it actually comes down to like, okay, what does this person need specifically in their environment? With what people do they have in their life? What supports do they have accessible to them? Where are they living? Where is their geographical location? Because I mean, I grew up in a very rural area. So being a social worker, you could refer people to like two different places. And then I moved to New York City and it was like a vastly different story where there was almost so much going on. It was hard to even decide what to do with someone. And so I really like support now though, because it kind of keeps that framework of this is a person, we're meeting them where they're at and kind of lining up. These are all the supports that we need around them, whether that's meals or money or like those different errands someone can run, whatever they could possibly need that can be met for them.
Well, and I think you know this so well, and you're probably personally and professionally, is that it's so much about us meeting people where they are. It's also about asking the right questions.
Yeah.
The general supporter type doesn't know what to ask.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't. They don't know. Again, they haven't been taught. They haven't been educated to say, oh, I can offer to take out the trash. I can offer to do these things. We've largely overlooked this mentality that the little things can add up to be very meaningful. The beauty of social workers is social workers are so well trained to understand that there's a number of factors and variables that contribute to somebody's environment. And therefore, when you're working with a patient or working with a family, you can deconstruct that in a way
mm-hmm.
where you can then provide the proper resources. And to your point, our goal, our hope is that support now is a resource that social workers see as being flexible to the scenario. And by the way, we will not be for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah.
No, no tool is for everybody. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're Google, that's the exception, right? Or the Apple iPhone, but even then, it's not for everybody. The idea, though, is that the kind of single-use pioneer tools that we see in the market today, they're great. And there is a more modern, compassionate way
mm-hmm.
to approach a tough time than being in a singular lane. And the more that social workers understand, and they already do understand, so that is not way in any way diminishing, that you have the ability to put forth the right resources for people to get the right type of relief.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful because, as you know, money doesn't solve everything.
No.
I mean, how many stories are there of people's, you know, suddenly raising a ton of money or winning the lottery, millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands, and it solves almost nothing.
Yeah.
It may take away some medical bills, but it doesn't solve the other components of the life that allows you to maintain routine. And that's so much at the heart of what we want to do. We want to help families maintain a sense of routine, because oftentimes in tough times, there's other children involved, or there's other siblings involved. There's other people involved that have to keep pushing forward all the while you're navigating this kind of this rare moment in time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that you even bring up to just that there's other people involved, because this is something I've seen in my work just as a therapist. Like, when there's a sick kid in the family or someone that needs a lot of support, all of a sudden, understandably, all of the focus and attention goes on to them, and the other siblings in the family are often forgotten. And I feel like this is where I particularly love where you can get more specific about like what a family needs, rather than just sending money. Like, hey, let me take Johnny out for a bike ride or something. Like, where you can really offer that specific support someone would need. That's really helpful, especially if there's other siblings involved who are just going through it, and then they're not being given the support that they need.
Or like the two questions that we ask ourselves every day, and ask customers every day, and ask as prospective customers every day, is what's causing you stress and what's costing you money? Those are two of the most important questions that we ask ourselves every day. What's causing our customers stress? What's costing them money? Because at the heart of that is what you're saying. It's like, it's the whole family unit that's affected by these things.
Yeah.
And so often we just like have a singular focus towards one person without realizing the effects. And I'll tell you, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they were saying that I think sometimes it's the dads that are so overlooked.
Oh, that's very true.
Because in a more, call it, traditional household, where, you know, let's say it's a kid that's sick, and they're in the hospital. Typically, and again, I don't want to generalize too much, but what you would see is the woman kind of playing the more like in the hospital role, while also trying to balance potential other children at home and school and all those things. And everyone's really aware of that. And then you have a father figure, hopefully, that also feels a responsibility of working to allow to afford certain things. And because they're not seen as much, sometimes they can feel the most neglected.
Yeah.
Because they're not kind of in it in that same like physical manner. And it was such a good reminder to even to me, as someone that does this and talks about this all the time, that this is not a gender or age or tough time specific. This is a human thing that people go through. And we all know men process emotions differently, and they really don't know how to ask for help. Fascinating, even in our own data, like to see like people that create support nows, registries, we call them, it's like overwhelmingly female. Fascinating. And that doesn't mean that they don't need help.
Right.
Doesn't mean that at all. And so I, you know, again, talking about like trying to build bridges towards like making sure people like know. And we live in such an amazing time where I think mental health is on the rise. The conversation around mental health has never been what it is today. Like, we're
even
so,
a few years ago, like it's completely shifted.
Since COVID, right? Like, since COVID, like, we're paying attention to these things differently. And so that's where I look at the opportunist in me is like, great, look at all this progress we're making and the conversations we're having about suicide and mental health and all these things. Our tools, our resources should match the conversation. Like, there can be a more comprehensive approach to this. And you know, that takes time, certainly. I mean, look, you see this, I'm sure, on Instagram, like I do, even grief. Like, we're talking about grief more than we ever have.
Yeah, it's
I can
huge.
pull up thousands of women, primarily women, right now on Instagram that are all talking about, it's amazing.
Yeah, I've seen just Instagram accounts specifically about someone's grief journey, like
It's incredible.
multiple. It's crazy. It's
It's
amazing.
incredible. And it's like, I'm seeing not just like widows and widowers, I'm seeing like sibling loss and of course child loss. And like these communities like picking themselves up. It's so fascinating because you have to imagine that the conversations that are happening on social media will eventually make its way to mainstream.
Yeah,
Because
absolutely.
that's where people are testing ideas of like, are people listening to this? Do people want to talk about this? And overwhelmingly, I'd say the answer is yes.
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost only a matter of time before more of these conversations become mainstream. And therefore, having the right tools to support those conversations, again, no matter how big, whether it's a tragic loss or a simple car crash where everything will be okay, but you know, you're pretty shook up.
Yeah.
Those things should all have the appropriate resources. And again, social workers just, you know, we've been working with social workers across primarily hospitals.
Yeah.
And I've been so struck by how immediately they get this.
That's
I'm like
right.
30 seconds into my pitch, and they're like, we're good.
All set.
Stop. What
Perfect.
do I need to give them? And it's great. It's great because not everybody, I think you know this, not everyone, especially in a hospital system, recognizes the whole family and the caregiver experience, not just the patient experience.
Especially, I mean, with a lot of like hospital social workers that I've known and that I've spoken to, their whole model is yes, there is usually one particular patient, but it's still very family unit focused because there's an understanding about how all those dynamics influence each other and how this one person will then affect the entire family system in that way. So it's really essential to support the whole unit while also still supporting that individual.
I have a question for you while we're doing this too. I mean, one of the things I hear most from families, they love their social worker,
Yeah.
and they say to me often, I wish I saw them more, or I wish there was more of them. I'd love to learn, you know, what do you think it will require for more families to see social workers on a more regular basis? You know, I'll give you an anecdote. I was talking to a hospital, and they were telling me that social workers only touch 30% of families.
Wow.
And I imagine it has to just do with underpaid or
Yeah.
understaffed. I'm just curious, like your own point of view on that, because it's such a necessary and valued role,
Yeah.
families, yet it doesn't always get the proper, I guess, recognition. Or I'm curious, like, what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're spot on. I think what I've been seeing just in this more like public conversation social workers have been having is that we're not as recognized or as appreciated. Also, it's kind of almost ingrained into us, like, don't expect to get paid well, and you better expect to have an insane caseload. So, like, we're already like off the jump with these really negative beliefs and associations with social work. And I think a lot of social workers are also very associated and tied to child protective services, which has a lot. So a lot of people just don't really know what social work is, what is it really for, what we do. But then a lot of social workers themselves are just like, okay, well, I have to see 200 people in a week and I have to do all the documentation and we have to follow like the government regulations around it. So it becomes overwhelming very quickly, which is unfortunate. And I think that could be easily solved by just having more social workers and having social workers paid what they're owed.
Feel more valued.
Yeah.
Yeah, because again, it's just so striking to me that we know that these resources are helpful. I'll tell you, I'll give you another example of where we've heard this is child life specialists.
Yeah.
People love child life specialists, and there's not enough of them. So it's almost like the systems need to kind of figure out what the appropriate mechanisms are,
Yeah.
even if it's not financial, to ensure that social workers feel valued. Because
Yeah.
feeling valued one way is monetary, but there's other ways of doing that. And having talked to especially a lot of cancer moms, holy moly, your life is turned upside down like that. You're entering into another stratosphere. And oftentimes it's the social worker that's sitting down with them to like help them try to envision and start to build towards this new, I hate the phrase new normal, but this new reality that they're going to be in. And without the right relationships there, you're setting parents up to feel even more grief than they already feel, because not only are they worried about their kid or whoever they're caring for, they're also trying to figure out how are we going to sustain.
I'm thinking too, like in those moments, I mean, it just depends on the situation, but in things where it's like a longer term issue, like kids with cancer or something, I mean, someone is kind of in survival response, like their stress response is actively triggered for that amount of time. So you're not able to be present. You're not able to process. Your brain is just focused on let's get through this day, let's get through this moment, and just like basic needs, and that's it. And so that's why like that sense of community and that support is so vital, because I do think it kind of takes off that need for like, okay, we're just in safety mode, we're just in survival mode, where it can get a person to this place of like, okay, let's breathe for a second. What do we
Breathe.
need? What's going on?
Totally. And we call support now registry. And I used to say this before, but I joke that as humans, we're really good at happy things. We're very good at weddings and we're very good at babies. And part of why we're good at it, right, is there's a registry. It makes it easy. We just show up,
Absolutely.
do the thing. And guess what? If you've ever been married and you've ever had a baby, those things are pretty dang overwhelming. I joke all the time. I'll never get married again because I'll never go through that again. That was craziness, crazy, and obviously a happy way. But in a way, what we're trying to do is just take that same construct of a registry and a happy time and apply it towards a tough time. And by doing that, what we're doing is we're normalizing the everyday behaviors that make people that allow them to maintain routine, that allow them to not feel like they're surviving. Maybe they're not thriving. But you can do a little bit better than just surviving. And it's been incredible because we see how our registry is used, and sometimes people are turning on Lend a Hand simply for prayer. And I don't say simple because prayer isn't simple, but it just is a reminder that like sometimes it is as simple as that. People wanting to know that you're thinking of them, that you're actively thinking about them. That can make a huge difference. Because I think what so often happens in tough times, especially in grief, is you feel so isolated that A, no one understands, and or that you're just solely that you're alone. And that's something that we want to change. And again, it's not unusual. I think a lot of people had these like COVID moments of like, what's my life's purpose? And what am I trying to do? And how am I gonna leave this earth? And for Scott and I, my husband and I, it was just became so acute where it's like, there's all this trauma in the world. No one knows what to do. People were looking for ways to really come together because we were so apart. We were so literally socially distanced. And that's where it was like, all right, well, let's build a piece of technology that might be able to help people in a more meaningful way. So
Absolutely.
I hope that helps.
Oh, it does. And I think it too, I mean, it just creates that longevity for community. Because I think, especially in the United States, we can be very individualistic, and to a point where
Incredibly.
it's like we're social beings, like we crave community and connection with other people.
We're
And
tribal.
sometimes this can be that space to like get in and also create a habit moving forward, like, okay, I'll continue to connect with this person. I'll continue to follow up with them and see what's going on with them once this thing is done, or even when it's not, as we continue to move through it.
Absolutely. That's it. You nailed it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jordan, for sharing all about Support Now. Where can those listening just like keep up with Support Now, use the registry?
Thank you. Thank you. So anyone can create a free registry on our website, supportnow.org. And if anyone's interested, we also have a very active Instagram handle, supportnow_org, where we share, honestly, expert resources like yourself. Across a variety of different spectrums, we share tips on support and just how to support people better. And we're oftentimes running different campaigns and sharing just different stories of what support should look like. And it's a happy, uplifting space. My hope is that when people hit our Instagram page, much like when they hit our website, is they shouldn't support shouldn't feel sad.
Yeah.
Support should feel uplifting because to your point, it is a part of the human experience to help, to like come together, to rally together. And we want to facilitate that in a way that, that people feel good about, that people know, like, we're here for you.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. For those listening, all that will be linked below so you can continue to keep up with Support Now. Don't forget to like, share, follow the podcast wherever you're listening, and we'll see you next time.